We don't have to try any harder. We don't need to fight anymore. We don't have to try any harder. No.
Hey, Jacob.
Hi, Scott.
What's happening?
Oh, man. Well, what's happening is I'm glad to see you. It feels like it's, well, since what, July 22nd. And so here we are, we fast forward two or three weeks. Yeah. What's been going on in your world?
Well, I feel the need now that I know people are also seeing us during these, I feel the need to call out the beautiful curls that are happening on the top of your head as your hair continues to grow. Wave them, baby, wave them.
Oh God, thank you. You know, it's so funny. I haven't done this for, the last time I did this was like 10 or 12 years ago that I actually tried to let my hair grow, and it was in Austin and it was humid and it was hard to manage. I'd never done it before. And so at one point I tied a bandana around my head and just let it kind of go. Finally, I just couldn't take it anymore, so I cut it off. But anyway, I'm still in that stage where it's like between like it'll fall down and do what it's supposed to do. And right now I'm just like, ah, so I feel like a Dr. Seuss character most of the time right now.
I think it's looking great. You know, I don't think about head hair very often because I haven't, I mean, on my own head, because I haven't had it for so long, but every once in a while, it's like, oh, it'd be fun to have hair just to be able to have options to do things with it. As it is now, I only have options with like my back hair and my chest hair and, you know, those types of things.
But you know, that could be really interesting, seeing you in a mosh pit with your back hair just like majestically flying around your shoulders.
Do the Charlie's Angels turn with my back. Exactly. Feather it. Oh boy.
Well, you're fresh back from a big mountain retreat with our friend David Gandelman. I'd love to hear. We haven't talked during that time. So how was that?
It was so fantastic. I wish you could have been there with us. And if that happens again, be there. I'm going to make sure I am.
All right.
The place where we were is called the Dancing Spirit Lodge, Dancing Spirit Ranch. And it's in Kalispell, Montana, which is right near Whitefish, which is just south of Glacier National Park.
Okay.
So the area itself is gorgeous, beautiful mountains and trees and big sky. And then the ranch itself was next level beautiful. I think I'm going to talk for a second into the camera. How does that, is that weird or should I keep talking to you? I didn't think about it, but now that we're being,
I almost always look right into the camera. So
oh, I didn't even notice. I'm always looking at you. I just can't take my eyes off of
it. It's the hair, isn't it? It's the
hair. Anyway, this ranch is stunning. Like I truly don't know that I've ever been on a property that had so much intention put into every space. I mean, it's the property itself is, it's family owned and it's 350 acres, but the part that's devoted to retreats is much smaller than that, but still many acres. And there's sacred geometry everywhere. It's just, it was stunning, Jacob. And then the group, it was me and David and 16 women, and it, like, incredible women, open-hearted, powerful, there to do the work of healing, to connect with one another, to hold space in a beautiful way for one another. I just feel like I had the opportunity to connect with each person there in a deep way over the course of a week, you know, and there were only 18 of us. And we went on hikes together. We were in circles together. I guided a couple breathwork sessions. I helped David facilitate. We did a lot of meditation. You know, that's at the core of a lot of the work that he does. He's so good. It was also just a thrill to watch a good friend of yours and someone you really love be exceptional at the work that they do in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was really beautiful. And it was a great week. Like I'm still high from it, honestly. I feel like everyone there had an extraordinary week in many different ways. So it was beautiful.
And that's so awesome. Yeah. I, I missed being there with all of you. And, you know, you said it, used a term that we are familiar with. We're familiar with doing it, with the experience of it. And it floats around in the spiritually circles quite a bit. But you said holding space for each other. I would love to hear you describe what that means for people who have heard it maybe. And sometimes, you know, it might get just tossed around lightly. But what does holding space mean, Scott?
Well, what it means for me is like in a workshop space, when you're gathered with other people, being present when others are sharing, being non-judgmental when others are sharing, being compassionate when others are sharing. And I felt like throughout this week in Montana, this group congealed really quickly. And the way that each person was showing up for each other, especially when people are sharing very vulnerably or crying very vulnerably, or even beyond just the workshop space at lunches when people are sharing their stories. And so for me to hold space, well, did you hear that?
I did.
There's a major storm happening, and I wish you were hearing it more, but now the thunder's coming in, and it's really beautiful and exciting out there. So it just means for me being present, compassionate, open to what you're experiencing. Not always considering if it's holding space for someone in a one-to-one context, not focused on what you're going to say next, but focused on what the person is sharing in the present moment, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And I love that. I'm glad that we're having this conversation because I can feel the world right now has been for a few years. I mean, before that, but especially intensely for a few years, I feel like trauma and tremendous destabilization of our experience of life, of the world, of each other, has been going on. And so the term holding space for me becomes that much more important. I had some people close to me just a week or so ago say some things that revealed their attitudes about some issues that are very important to me. And it rocked me a little bit. It came as a surprise. I knew that we had differing feelings and opinions about some things, but what emerged was like, oh shit, like that's really in there for you. And some conspiracy stuff and some just a bias toward a view of the world and some of these things that are happening. I'm not being very specific about this on purpose, but you can kind of just take your pick, though, that then the ideas that wrap around them, the fear-based things, the control-based things, it was genuinely disturbing for me. And, you know, as I was meditating about it later, like, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with this in this connection, in this friendship? Because it's somebody I really love and trust in most ways. And I felt guided to simply do exactly that, Scott, hold space, not get in a hurry to resolve this. Like, how do we deal with this, knowing that that's how you see the world and how much it can influence your behaviors, your, what am I trying to say here? If you believe this, if that's really in there, then you are more likely to fall on the side of fear if push comes to shove. But I felt really guided to just simply go, it's not crucial right now to try to bring this to a head, to try to resolve it. Simply hold the space and be curious and open. So, yeah.
And where are you now with it?
There.
You're still in that space.
Yeah. And that's how it feels. That's how I feel. What's indicated right now is that. And going back to your description of holding space, I was doing it before that, Scott, but going through the men's group cycles for some years really taught that as a true practice. And I love what you said, being able to listen with your heart, to listen without looking for the next response or reaction. I love that. And that feels like such a valuable skill to learn and something to practice for me every day, you know?
All the time, because if we really pay attention to how we're functioning in dialogue with others, I think we're likely to find a decent percentage of the time we're considering what we're going to say next.
Yes.
And if we're considering what we're going to say next, we're not being present with what's being shared with us. Mm-hmm. And when you can step outside of that, and I think also, Jacob, we we are people who lead groups and or work one-on-one with people, and I notice the compulsion to think about what I'm going to say next is directly related to some version of insecurity that I'm going to have enough to offer this person.
Yes.
You know, so I'm thinking about what I want to say to make it worth their while in this group or worth their while in this one-on-one. And instead of trusting, instead of trusting that if I'm just present with what they're saying, what needs to come through me, if there's anything that needs to come through me, is going to be the right thing and more likely to be the right thing if I'm present with what they're sharing in the moment, because then I'm actually focused on their energy instead of on my energy and my insecurity and my need to be this like really wise person with these beautiful things to share. It's hailing out now, by the way, just to give you a storm update. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really, I feel like to some degree I will likely be on that trajectory for a long time if I continue to work with people. I don't know that I'll be 100% free of that compulsion or that need or that insecurity and just trust completely in the moment, completely in spirit to use me how it is I need to be used to help this person or to show up for this person or to just love this person.
Yeah.
You know?
I do know. And I love that you're talking about your work in that way, Scott. That has become more and more what I do when I'm in those settings as well. And you're right. It is so interesting. Like sometimes halfway through a client session, a guidance session, there's this, okay, is anything going to happen here? And, and you know, is anything going to happen here? And what's so interesting is that almost always marks a shift because I get this tap on the shoulder and say, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's not up to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. And I mean, to what you were saying before, Jacob, I think there's something important there as well. The idea that people in our lives are going to come to very different understandings of the world around us. And at times in a way that can feel affronting to us or shocking or just disheartening even.
Yeah.
And I think that, man, these past several years, well, the Trump years and then the vaccination years and all of these things have been bringing these types of conversations up. I feel like more and more these types of potential confrontations. And what I'm coming to discover is that there are people in my life who I am still want to be in my life who have wildly different views about politics and everything or most things. And yet there's an energetic tie to them that still feels good to me. And there are others who have wildly different views that it feels like energetically we've moved in different directions in part because of how we are approaching those views. But I think there's more of a story there because there are also people in my life who have very parallel views to me with whom I'm noticing energetic shifts and I'm noticing us moving away from each other. So it's not just about what do you think of vaccination or what do you think of Biden? I think there are deeper things going on also. It's for me, it's becoming on the one hand more about how open are you to being with what you feel and holding space, there's that word again, for others in what they're feeling. Because what I'm realizing is I am called to associate more with people who have a general willingness to hold space for people where they are in their lives instead of shutting them down simply because they don't look at things the same way that others look at things. Does that make sense?
That makes an entire sense, or whatever that word should be. You know, if we take that term just for a moment and those two words, hold and space, you know, and if I'm holding something, that means I'm making room for it. I'm intentionally, and then space. I love the idea of space. Space, I myself, I get I feel really triggered if I'm on the freeway or on a road and somebody's like not giving me space. They're tailgating mm-hmm. me, right?
Yeah.
Especially if it's a big truck, because they're probably a Trump supporter and they're just bad. And they're arrogant, and I bet they're bad to women, and they're, you know, all the things.
For those of you listening, that's Jacob being funny. I mean, if you're taking it too seriously, it's him being, wait, what's the word I'm looking
snarky.
For?
Snarky.
Or facetious.
Facetious. Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah. So no, it's just interesting that to create, I've learned, Scott, in my life, and it's taken me a long time. Almost every time if I'm feeling stress or anxiety, what I need to do is create space around myself, space mm-hmm. to listen to myself, space to breathe, space to tune in. And the more that I do it, the more that I make it a daily practice, the more peaceful, the more in my center I feel, the more connected to intuition. And so when I think about doing that with other people, that's what I also want to offer, is space around them to be themselves, to open up, to not have to defend, to feel what they're feeling and to process that. And so if they can do that with me there, whether I'm their friend or their guide or whatever role I'm playing, if they can do that and feel the freedom to do that, then I feel like now we're back to a person there is space for transformation. There is space to become who I really am in the space that I make around myself. And if we create that for each other and for others, then I feel like that's really the medicine the world needs right now. And it's really hard to give it when we're in times of intensely differing views, intense things that feel like they have such grave, ponderous consequences. So I feel like maybe that's the theme of today's show is holding space. Like, what does that even mean? How do we do it in times like these?
And it's entirely legitimate if in doing so, you see yourself not feeling the call to be in relationship with the person in the same way, you know, but the invitation here that I think Jacob and I are talking about is, even if that's the direction you go, can we remember to do so with compassion, to do so with the understanding that we are all, each of us, coming to the place where we are in life, the understandings of things in life, based on a lifetime of experience, based on the relationships that we have, based on the choices we make around where we're receiving the information and news that we're receiving. And all of these different things contribute to how we have arrived where we are in this moment with our understanding about everything we understand. So even if there's a person in front of you who has come to wildly different understandings, and you make the choice to disengage with this person more so than you had been, mm-hmm. do it with love as much as possible. We do not have to dehumanize people.
Right.
We do not have to make them villains. It's not necessary, is what I'm saying. Even if we see their actions as dehumanizing or villainous, how can we show up differently? How can we show up more aligned with the type of world we want to create? And I feel like if we really checked in with most everyone on the planet and asked them, what type of world do you want to create, or what type of world would you want to be living in? Most people in that answer are going to use words like more loving, mm-hmm. more respectful. Like, I think at our core, we are likely to want to see the same kind of world. It's just we have very different ideas about what leads to the creation of that world, or even what that might look like.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. I was on LinkedIn the other day, and one of Don Miguel Ruiz's, I think she must be a niece or something, but she's involved in helping take the Four Agreements practice into the workplace. And so she posts stuff there. And she posted something the other day that said, the only person who is unbiased is the person who has the same biases as you.
Yeah, exactly. And can we just be willing to admit it? Like, can we just start acknowledging things? Like, I think about hypocrisy a lot, mostly when I'm recognizing my own hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And so I recognized my own hypocrisy recently, and I'll share why. And I feel, I hesitate to share this only because I feel like it could come across as, You know what? It's going to come across however it comes across. So
are you getting ready to do a humble brag, Scott?
No. No, it's not a humble brag at all.
Okay.
But it yes.
We'll do it for that,
you
too.
Know, I'm going to share it, and then we can dissect it and decide right, how it came across. Right. So there is a part of me that I think you and I both know, because we receive messages from people and we have a sense about it, that for some, this is a valuable a podcast. Like, there are people out there who are benefiting from it and love it and look forward to it. And then when I look at the number of reviews and ratings we have, it's very small. It's 32 mm-hmm. people. And there's a part of me that gets frustrated with that. Like, that is like, if you love this so much, just take for 3 seconds to leave, to just put a rating on it, and then take 10 more seconds to leave a review. Mm-hmm. It takes nothing. And it's such an easy and lovely show of support. Now, do you realize why I was hesitant to share this? Because it sounds so like judgmental and petty. So what I want to say also with this, because it's leading to a richer story, is that this is not the core of me at all, but it is a part of my mind that experiences this. And I was thinking about this the other day, and then I was looking at, the reason I'm bringing it up is for this reason. I have, I think, 11 or 12 podcasts saved in my library. And I was looking at them. Only one have I left a rating and review for. And these are the podcasts I love and listen to regularly. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, you wild hypocrite. like, why have you not taken 3 seconds to leave a rating and in another however many seconds to leave a review? And in that moment, it was like, no, don't just ask yourself this question and reflect on it right now. I want you to do all of this. And so mm-hmm. I went through every podcast in my library and I took the time to leave a rating. And for each one of them, I left a review. And maybe it took me 15 to 20 minutes to do that. And it felt wonderful to do it, because for me, the energy of that was, this is such a small way to give back to these people who are bringing so much value to my life.
Yeah.
And it was also such a beautiful way to reflect on the hypocrisy of, you know, the truth is, Jacob, it's not like when I get frustrated that more people aren't just taking the time to do it. It's not that I'm not aware that I'm not living in that frustration without awareness around the hypocrisy of it. But it was really, really evident when I was just staring at this library of people I have not in any way supported with my ratings and reviews. And it was just a beautiful reminder, because I think so much of what creates the disconnection that we see and have seen for years is our unwillingness to own our place in it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like, well, look at this. You know, if you're going to go to a story inside of yourself that people aren't showing up for you, or could show up more for you, look at the ways in which you could show up more for others. Look at the ways in which you could give in the exact same way. And that's so often the case. It's like we are judging other people for the exact same thing that we ourselves are doing.
Yes.
And if we can, and when we own that, what it creates is more space to acknowledge the humanity in others. It steers us away from the condemnation and more to the connection of their humanity, more to compassion, more to empathy. And so anytime we're willing to acknowledge our own hypocrisy, I feel like it's automatically steering us toward deeper connection with others.
I love that story. I love that story. I heard it.
Did you hear that?
You've got
life is like, yes, right on.
You've got the clash of the titans happening over your head there. That's really cool. Yeah. No, I love that story, and I love that you followed up with it with action. You noticed the hypocrisy, and you're like, okay, wait a minute. I'm not too busy. I will do what I would love to others to be doing. And Scott, coming back to the holding space, like, I've discovered in my life, connected with what you just said, I've discovered in my life that when I learned how to hold space for myself, it created the ability to do it for others. Mm-hmm. I cannot give to others. And I know this is such a cliche and it's so true. Can't give to others what you don't already have for yourself. Love, generosity, any of those things. And I think it's such a deeper practice to learn how to stop and say, and this is where I need to do this for me. This is where I need to step across that line. And I've noticed that my ability to do that with other people, to actually hold curious space, has the capacity for that has widened in my life because I do it with myself every single day with my journaling and my meditation and my walks and the things like that. And so I think previous to that, it was hypothetical for me most of the time. And so the ability to show up that way for other people only happened very intermittently, you know, and maybe not even as with the kind of quality that I would have wanted. So now I find that it's happening more often. And I feel like it's happening in direct proportion to the commitment of doing it for myself too, you know?
I mean, I think that is always the case. The more we show up for ourselves, the more we have available to others. And I don't agree though that you have to be in a place where of total love for self in order to love others. Because I've found many times in my life that it is also through loving others that I've grown in love of self. You know, I think that sometimes we are not able to show up for ourselves the way we can for others. Sometimes we are actually much more generous with others than we are for ourselves, much more compassionate with others than we are for ourselves. And in that action, if we can recognize that, my goodness, look at how much love I am giving to this friendship. Look at how much generosity, look how much grace I'm giving to this friendship and how much I struggle to give that to myself. And then remind ourselves, well, obviously the love that I feel inside of myself would not just be there to give to other people. Like, it is there for myself as well. And I am able to show up for others with this love. So naturally it is within me somewhere with willingness and commitment to show up for myself that way too.
Damn it. When you said you disagreed with something, I thought we were going to actually get to have a fight here, and I'd have to hold space for your error.
What do you have? What do you got, baby? Then you just
close the loop. I'm fine with everything you just said. So,
well, that's because I'm a little bit wiser than you. I'm just more tapped in. So, I mean, there's really nothing I'm ever going to say that you can object to.
God damn it! I know that's
okay. You know, you're growing. You're evolving. Yeah. You'll get to where I am soon enough. If we keep these, maybe by podcast like 62 will be on the same level. Keep trying, baby. I believe in you, Jacob.
You could do it. Oh, I love that. All right. So
you know what I'm saying though? Because I do think, and the reason I highlight this, and I know I feel you're agreeing with what I'm saying, and is that I think sometimes people shut themselves down or off from actually moving into relationship or trying to build friendship because there's some voice in their heads. It's like, I can't do that until I fully love myself, you know? And if we all waited to fully love ourselves before we give ourselves over to others, we'd all be alone all the time because there's really, I have yet to meet anyone on the planet who is always in a place of deep and profound self-love.
No. And there are, it's so interesting, Scott, from a psychological standpoint here. And this is not brain science. This is just psychology. The understanding of projection, like what you were saying just a moment ago, like if I'm transferring or projecting, if I find, and I, in my life, this was the case, I found that I could be and wanted to be so generous and loving with other people. And I could make space for their, you know, difficult spots and the way, but I didn't know how to do it for myself. And so that is sort of like I'm projecting. And then, but then realizing that when I felt lonely, when I felt like no one was doing that for me, but I was doing all of this for these other people, that's what began to wake me up and realize, okay, really what you are asking for is the same thing you're giving to others. So can I give a little bit more of that to myself?
Yeah.
But I think that's that interesting dance. And I don't believe, I'm right there with you, I don't believe that we can get so perfectionistically healed and whole before we go out and try to have a relationship, let's say a romantic relationship, that we're going to do it perfectly. I feel like some things only can be healed in relationship. And yes, I do need a foundation of self-love, or at least the ability to reflect, before I'll probably do it even decently with someone else. But to say, oh, I'm going to get myself completely healed and whole before I go out and have, it's just not going to happen, to your point.
Yeah, I think it's just fear. I think that we come up with a lot of reasons to prevent us from moving forward in all areas of our lives. And when those resistances come up and those fears, I think the mind is brilliant at selling us stories of legitimizing why it is we shouldn't do something. And so often those reasons are just rooted in fear and resistance. It's not actually true, even though our mind is a master at making things seem true, you know. And I was going to try to come up with an example of that right now, but I can't. I mean, it's like you could have any reason to move forward in a relationship, but then you tell yourself, no, you know, actually I'm taking time out right now and I really need to do work on myself and give myself over to my journal writing practice right now. And all those things might be absolutely true and completely not the reason you're choosing to avoid getting into a relationship. You're right. Choosing to avoid getting into a relationship because you're terrified of being abandoned, or you're terrified of having your heart broken, or needing someone too much. And those are the real reasons. And even if that's the reason why you're choosing not to do it, let's at least get to the truth of it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the thing, Jacob. I think it can be very hard to get to the truth of things because we don't want to face what's actually true. It's easier to face the things we've layered on top of the truth and to look at those things and approach those things with more commitment than the deeper truth of, I am terrified of needing somebody and of somebody needing me.
Yeah. Yes.
You know? But nothing gets healed without honesty.
Right.
You know?
No, it doesn't. And I felt like I had a really just truly way to close that loop brilliantly. And then it just left me. So I'll just leave it there. You know, are you okay with a crashing segue?
Absolutely.
Okay. I hope you would be, because I really didn't have anything else.
Always. Except this
crashing segue. No, you know, it was a friend of mine the other day sent it was a funny meme. I won't try to describe it, except that it was like, here's this headache. A migraine, here's a sinus headache, and then I guess I am describing it now. And then there's this whole head headache of Americans living through the headache of the Pluto return, which astrologers have looked at this period of time we're in as this massive return of, you know, the energy of Pluto, which was present during the American Revolution, Scott.
And what is that energy? Break it down for us, please.
Well, the energy of Pluto is death, rebirth, and transformation. Pluto is the god of the underworld. Pluto was the one who drug Persephone down below into the, and so Pluto is this ponderous, massive energy of change, of transformation, and it is heavy, and it is dense, and it is intense, and it's hard. I find it instructive. I find it interesting that here we are in the middle of, we're living through right through the middle of intensity that, and I think Pluto is one of those planets they've measured and said, if you were trying to walk on the planet Pluto, you couldn't, because the atmosphere is, the magnetic force is so powerful, you could just barely crawl or something like that. Like it'd be hundreds of feet under the sea would be another example of how intense that would be. So here we are though, moving through this time, and I was, you know, picking up headlines about Trump and what's going on. And then, you know, some people around me had surprising other views about what's going on. I'm like, holy shit, how could you possibly think that about this despicable human being? And then my sister and I, and we share a lot of, you know, viewpoints, but also share the ability to zoom out and look at things, you know, and say, oh my God, from far away, it's amazing. And when you think about the status quo, the gridlock that has been American politics for many, many, many decades, if not longer, the idea of this complete, in my mind, insane person showing up and literally breaking all of the rules of decorum. This is how we do things. setting people at each other's throats, you know, this Congress people and legislatures and the legal system and everything, just everyone's just like, what the fuck is going on right now? I hate you. You can't do that. But it's almost as if we needed that level of, you know, trickster energy, coyote energy, somebody who just genuinely does not give a shit enough to have those hostilities and biases and things come up to the surface for us to actually begin to ask the question of what is true equality? Yeah. What is the American dream? And can we actually reconnect to something that is in alignment with our values and not be hypocrites saying, yeah, we're these amazing saviors of the world, and then under the surface is just all this bullshit going on. So from that standpoint, from a zoomed out standpoint, I am totally fascinated by what's happening right now.
Yeah. And why not bring some of that standpoint to this experience? You know, we're in the unfolding of it all. None of the, you know, and we're constantly in the unfolding of it all. And for me, as you're talking, I just feel like it puts me back in my soul, or the soul place that I feel like we all hold within us, which is really where I feel the witness lives. You know, that place within us that is just watching with no judgment, with total detachment, with total stillness, with total okayness, the soul that has been incarnated who knows how many times, lived who knows how many lives, done who knows how many horrific things in some of those lives, and has been on the receiving end of any number of more horrific things in others of those lives. And it's to say it, because I feel like sometimes when you talk about these things, not you, but when I talk about these things from this place, it feels like denial or not the recognition of what horrors get created by a personality like Trump and what he fuels that is very real and has very real repercussions on society and individuals. And all of that is real and true, and still I want to be here in a way that is more peaceful than not. Mm-hmm. And so how I am able to come to that place more often than I was able is to connect to that place inside of myself that is actually never outside of that peacefulness, you know? And again, that's what I see as my soul, the place in the place inside of myself that is never outside of love, which is what I see as my heart. And those energies are different to me. One is just quiet and still, and the other is active in choosing to love and be compassionate no matter what.
I like that distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how those energies feel different to me. Like love, even love is noise to my soul. It's a beautiful noise. It's a symphony. It's melodious. It's gorgeous. It's not quiet though. You know, it's something else. And then beneath it. So for me, the energy of the soul is really what I, and again, I was going to say I'm talking on my ass, which is not true at all. But what I was going to say is I'm talking through my experience and my intuitive understanding. I have no idea if this is true or accurate. It's what feels true to me that at our core, we are stillness. Mm-hmm. And then just layered beautifully over that stillness is love. And then piled on top of both those things is a lifetime of conditioning and trauma and insanity. And part of the work here is remembering what is alive beneath all that conditioning and stuff. And that is love and stillness.
Yeah. Well, I'll just go ahead and relate this to Jill Bolte's Taylor's book, Whole Brain Living. And what you just described, Scott, is the right brain lower side. She calls that brain four is the witness. It's very, very still. And then brain three, right brain is pure experience, joy, like the action, kind of like the love you just mentioned, like the activity of it. And then this part of the brain is the one, the lower left side, that's the one that holds on to memory, but tends to hold on to the charged, painful memories of trauma. And then the frontal left side is the one that creates all the urgency and we have to do something about this. And so it's interesting to be with all of those parts all those parts, and for myself in the middle of, you know, being a human being going through the experience of change, of destabilization that's happening right now in our country and really the world also, you know, just that. And learning to have more compassion, not just retreating to the witness completely all of the time, because I think that if it were possible, it also would be a denial of the rest of the experience, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, was the Buddha in the witness all the time?
We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to imagine being in the witness all the time, but I feel like the most evolved who have ever lived, my sense is they were living highly detached on an energetic level, and not without love, because I think the Buddha was profoundly loving and Jesus was profoundly loving. But again, I'm just maybe projecting on what I imagine enlightenment to feel like. I just think that no matter what, there is a sense of peace that is underlying everything all of the time when you really reach that state of self-realization, that you come to, if everything is God, if everything is oneness, I suspect it becomes really difficult to judge anything that is a part of this oneness experience as right or wrong, and as just is a part of this oneness experience. Does that make sense? I'm not there because I can't, yeah. I can't. Oh, go ahead. What are you going to say?
No, finish that up.
I
want to hear about how you're not there yet. That sounds good to me.
Well, I'm not there because I'm not fully detached from all the trauma that exists on this earth and all the injustice and all the pain. I'm not able to look at it as all part of God and to the extent that I am at peace with all of it. Mm-hmm. Though I do believe my soul is at peace with all of it. I do believe my soul is at peace with everything here, with all the trauma, with all the injustice, because I don't connect to that place in my soul to the extent that I believe it's there. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because I feel like that part is a constant, Scott. I mean, that to me, when I have a really deep meditation, that's touching, that's bathing in that space for a period of time.
Right.
And so I feel like that is always available to us. And it's right. Usually just a breath or two away. What I'm hearing you say, I think, is that people who have developed a greater and greater awareness and experience of that in most of their life experience tend to be less engaged in the drama and the trauma of things as, and judging it as, this shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be happening to anyone or to me or anything. But then you take, you know, again, most of our ideas about these, you know, enlightened masters are being filtered through so many thousands or hundreds of years of stories about them, and generally putting them on a greater pedestal than they would have wanted for themselves. Jesus Christ experienced anger and
flipped tables. And, yeah,
exactly. I mean, there were, and also the next day was raising someone from the dead and whatever it was, but, and probably just walking around in the dust and looking for some wine. But, I feel strongly that there's this beautiful, you probably have been there maybe, to the Sedona Mago Retreat Center down in Arizona.
No.
Okay, we need to do something there with David sometime, I hope. Yeah. It's such a great spot. But they, you know, they bring the sort of Korean Taoist flavor of Buddhism into that center. And so it's just a beautiful spot with great big, you know, golden statues of this, you know, one of their people out there in the middle of the Red Rock wilderness. And it's startling and beautiful and amazing. But in their gathering hall, they have, you know, different things written on the walls. And one of them is that essentially the goal is to live outside of emotion, to live this completely what you're describing, like even keeled, equanimous space. And I was there with Heather Ashimara, you know, who's a firewalker and an amazing leader and worked with the Ruiz family, apprenticed with them for many years. And we were looking at that together. And I turned to her and I said, Ash, I don't know if I can buy that. And not as if it's not a wonderful, valuable thing to cultivate more and more of, but the idea that somehow we're supposed to get there where we can't be rocked by or touched by the feelings and emotions of this world, mm-hmm. that feels like an attempt to transcend our own humanity in a way that I don't know is all that useful for most of us. And I don't want to make that a dogmatic statement, like, no, we have to stay totally entangled in the experience here. But I do feel like, Scott, whatever the soul is and whatever places it journeys outside of this planet, being here to me is precious. Being here to me matters. To have matter matters. And yeah. And some of that experience includes feelings, emotions, the experience of conflict. And I think that if we, you know, can imagine, I loved your comment earlier about the likely or possibly the many, many different lives we live. This one lifetime that I'm living, it's as if I woke up in the middle of a scene on a stage or in a movie, you know, as one of the actors. And to me, this is all encompassing. This is my life, and it's important, and it's important yeah. how I play it. And it's important what these people are doing. But if you look at the trajectory, the journey of a soul, of an eternal energy, it's just one scene. It's just one scene.
Absolutely. That was so beautifully stated. I love how you put all of that. And I connect to everything you said. And for me, it really comes back to being like feeling the tears, feeling the anger, feeling the joy, and holding space for it all. That's really what I see as what I'm moving more deeply into, is just being in the same way that I want to be with others as they're experiencing whatever they're experiencing. I want to be with myself in that same way. And I do recognize, you said it's one or two breaths away, that sense of peace. And I do recognize that that is within me. And because I know it's there, there is a deep call to be living in that in a deeper way. And I think a greater call is to be with the parts of me who aren't able to live in that in a deeper way, and to just be with myself wherever I'm living and however I'm able to live. And I recognize that my story in this lifetime, a big part of it has been and continues to be, which leads me to believe it will likely always, well, I won't say always, but I suspect it will be a big part of my story, is love. It's like, no matter what I do, Jacob, I am continuously, I feel like the download from life, from spirit is, oh, you are here to keep making noise about love. And that's when you feel best. And that's when you feel most at home. So just, you keep doing that. And part of that is honoring in this lifetime, in this story, like, play with why you're here. And for me, the answer to that is, where do you feel most at home in yourself when you're doing X, when you're communicating Y? If what you're noticing is that's when you feel most at home in yourself, that may be a cue as to what this lifetime might in part be about for you. I feel like so many of us are looking for our purpose or our calling, and I think we do a disservice to ourselves when we get locked into that.
Yeah.
And I think we do a great service to ourselves when we start paying attention to the moments where we feel most lit up and giving more energy to things like that. And for me, every single time I feel most lit up when I'm connecting to love and connecting to others through love and what love invites into our lives.
Man, that was a beautiful monologue there. Really though.
Bowing.
No, I love what you just said about purpose also. Right. I feel like trying to get too focused on, okay, what's the one thing? What's my mm-hmm. one? We've talked about that, I'm sure, many times before here, but is its own barrier to sensing into, to experiencing what it is. But I do love what you said there, Scott, as far as allowing yourself to become in tune better with a theme. Maybe this act of your soul's journey on this planet is to experience and share from that one dominant theme, you know? And I love Carolyn Mace's Sacred Contracts and talking about the different archetypes that are alive within us and how some people seem to carry more the energy of, let's say, a warrior or, you know, whatever the other archetypes might be. So I love that as you live more and more and accept yourself, who you are right now in this world, and live from that place, to me, that reflects alignment. And I think alignment is powerful. Alignment means a deeper, more powerful experience of life.
Absolutely. And part of that alignment is also understanding it could change entirely tomorrow or in a month. Like, my direction could steer away from love and making noise for love and being open to, I don't think it will, honestly, but
I was going to say, it's hard for me to imagine you being, like a sociopathic assassin hit person.
Sure. It's hard for me to imagine that too. I mean, but it's just like being curious. If your journey takes you to a different place, that is likely for a reason too. And if you're open to it, who knows what adventures are on the other side of exploring that curiosity.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Scott, I'm in a phase right now that in the human design world, yet another one of the self-discovery tools out there. Are you familiar with that?
Ish. Very slightly. Is that the like activator or motivator or?
Manifestor, generator, projector, those sort of things. My girlfriend is really knowledgeable about it. I'm barely knowledgeable about it. Even though I helped Karen Curry, who's one of the main sort of experts on it, we helped her publish her book with Randy Davila at Hyperfrom Publishing, and so I've been around it. But one thing she did for me years ago was a reading, and she has many intuitive gifts, sort of beyond the Human Design program system. But she said, Jacob, what you're going to find is that the closer you come to your 50th year, the more you're going to, she said, and she explained it with all the lines and gates and open channels and all that stuff. But she said, what right now, and this is years ago, she said, you're in a period that's called being on the roof. And that means you can see the world can see you, but you're not really down there like doing things, making things happen. She said, you're going to start finding yourself coming off the roof as you get closer to your 50th year. And when you do that, you're just going to be astonished that things before that you really wanted to do and just felt stymied, suddenly things are going to start happening and you're not even going to know why it's different. But mm-hmm. she said it is like an archetypal shift. You definitely begin to shift into a different season of your life. And she said, in the meantime, it doesn't mean don't try to do things if they're calling your name, but just relax a little bit. Like, when it's time, when things are aligned, things are just going to start happening. And it's been an astonishing couple of years, Scott, and especially this year, to feel that happening. And I've thought back to those conversations with Karen. She gave me some counsel that actually did help me relax a little bit. So to your point of a different season, a different theme, I feel like that is quite possible. And I'm experiencing it right now in my own life.
Yeah, I feel I'm experiencing it in my life as well.
Yeah.
So I hear you there. And I, you know, I'm 51, so I'm high on the roof.
Well, you're closer to enlightenment than I am because you're a couple of years ahead. You've been trying to get there harder and longer than I have. So,
well, that's true. But I think also when I was your age, I was more evolved than you are.
Oh, yes.
The 3 years ago, the version of me was definitely more advanced.
So far advanced.
I think we should end on that note. That feels like a great.
Oh, no, that's brilliant. Actually, let's, because otherwise we'll go into another 2-hour conversation. I want to give a preview of something that I've been hinting at for a while. But before I do that, Scott, what do you have coming up that you'd like to make sure people know about?
Oh, I've been on hiatus with the online breathwork, but it's starting again tomorrow. It was on Tuesdays and now it's not going to be on a set day. It's going to be on when I can make it work. So it's tomorrow, Thursday, August 11th. If you want to join me online for Breath and Belonging, do that. And I have finally, after so long of toying with doing this, I'm ready to work with a few people one-on-one. So if that's something I've done it in the past, but very, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, very irregularly. And I feel open and really excited to give my energy to some one-on-one work with people who feel called to work with me in that way. So if that's a call you're feeling, shoot me an email.
Well, and Scott, I realized that you wouldn't want to get too probably specific about this, but what are some ways that people might know that, hey, I do feel tugged to work with Scott? Like, what do you notice that people tend to show up with when they're feeling like it's time?
I mean, first and foremost, it's if they feel called to my energy is why they're going to want to work with me. So if you're listening to this, you have a sense of my energy. You know that in working together, self-love is going to be foundational in any work we do together, because I believe it serves everything. So if you want to work with me through a creative lens, you know, if there's a writing project or a creative project you want to work on with me, we're going to get into your relationship with yourself. Like, mm-hmm. that is really the core of the work that I like to do with people. Writing is a tool I love to use in the work that I do with people. Breath work now is, I'm hoping some people are going to want to do some one-on-one breath work sessions with me as well. I'm going to feel called to do that likely, maybe not initially, but it's really, I think, so much in terms of the people we choose to work with, whether it's in workshops or groups. It's like, it's an energetic connection and a feeling like the way what they're talking about and the way that they're sharing is something that I'm responding to and I'm feeling inside of myself. I feel myself open up when they're sharing. I'm feeling a yes in my being through what they're sharing. That's how I decide who I want to go deeper with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. No, I love that. And it's funny, Scott, that's you and I are very much alike in terms of not pushing that part of our work out in the world much. Like, people almost have to
never
talk me down and say, I want to work with you. So
yeah, that's how it's always been for me. But I feel like I want to be a bit more proactive in at least in letting people know I'm available for that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as your friend and somebody who's observed you for a long time, I just know that people who feel that tug are going to get a lot from that experience. So, you don't even have to agree with me, but I know that's the case. So,
One other quick thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you're in the Detroit area, I'm going to visit family next week, and I'm offering two on Saturday, August 20th and Sunday, August 21st from 10 a.m. to noon each day. They're individual workshops. You can take one or both, but it's a live breath and belonging. So it's like a mini workshop, but mostly a breath work journey, and it's going to be awesome. So if you're in the Detroit area, you know, come, and we'll share links to those, of course.
I wouldn't normally say this, but I kind of want to go to Detroit and see that and be part of that.
come, baby.
Okay. A pretty big piece of news, Scott. The Institute for Creative Living that I started a year and a half ago, when I did the Heal Plus Create event that you were part of, earlier this year, that really solidified that it's time to make the Heal Plus Create aspect of it the major place where we grow a community and offer events and experiences. And so that's been underway. And on the tech side, we're working hard on getting those communities transferred over. We have an active writing community there now. and that's all very exciting. But in the meantime, I was in the process of filing the nonprofit 501c3 status for the Institute for Creative Living Foundation, which has people on it like Barnett Bain and Chris Niebauer, neuropsychologist, and Dr. Stephen Farmer, and you. I don't know if I've officially brought you onto the board yet. No, but there are all these people who are going to provide this, you know, heart and mind think tank, a brain trust to begin to identify the places in our society that we can develop programs to help people move through their and past their previous conditioning and into more of the kind of life that we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. But what's so exciting and interesting to me there is that I filed the nonprofit application, and Scott, everyone says it takes 12 to 18 months. You'll probably get rejected first. You'll have to refile. My approval came through in under a month.
Are you kidding me?
It's fully approved as a 501c3
wow,
now.
I know. Extraordinary.
So that app, that'll operate as the nonprofit side. We'll do grant work and, you know, donation work and things to build up some endowment so we can actually then fund these kinds of not just research, but the actual development of programs. So that's exciting.
Congratulations, brother. I'm curious though, because that happened so much faster than you could have possibly expected it to.
Yeah.
Was there a part of, like, I get that there's a lot of excitement. Was there a part of you that's like, oh fuck, I wasn't expecting to have to really think about this in a big way for a year.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's
like little dog catch train. Now what? Yeah. Got the train. Yeah, no, it's funny you say that. It's exactly how I felt. I'm sitting there holding this piece of paper from the IRS going, when I got the letter in the mailbox from the IRS, the first thing is, oh shit, I don't really like mail from the IRS. Second thing was, oh, it's probably them acknowledging the receipt of our application, telling us that someday in the future, they'll have more questions for me. So I was pretty amazed when I opened up. It's like, oh, you're approved. I'm like, okay, good. Now what?
Wow. Extraordinary.
So there's that. That's just news, and I'm grateful and excited about it. But the big news that I'm really excited about is there won't be a link this time, but maybe if we record next week, I'll have the live link. We have full verbal agreement from the various presenters, but I'm doing a writing retreat in the Bay Area at the gorgeous College of Marin, which is where Prince and Robin Williams went. So they have this beautiful event center, and we're doing this writer's retreat there with Anne Lamott.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
I'm so excited about this. It's been on my bucket list, dream list for so long to do some kind of work with Anne Lamott. So the fact that we're doing it is really, really exciting. And then Julia Cameron has agreed to be there. She'll join us by Zoom because she doesn't feel good about traveling places right now. And then Sark will be there.
Beautiful.
I know.
Powerhouse trio.
So excited. And then this woman who's worked with my writing community partner, Lauren Sapala, her name is Linda Jones, and she's from Dallas, and she's known as the writing doula. And she's African-American, and she does a tremendous amount of work with the African-American community of grief work and expressive work and really using words and poetry and things like that to move through that. So she'll be coming to lead a amazing workshop using poetry. And then she'll also MC the poetry sharing experience later that evening with everyone. So that's all coming up. Oh, and by the way, it'll be the last weekend in October.
Beautiful.
And the other thing that I'm so excited about, Scott, is that it's going to be hybrid. So 200 or 300 people can show up on site, but this will be beamed out to the rest of the world via Zoom. So everyone can really join us from wherever without having to travel and pay the higher prices. So I'm so excited about that. Sam Lamott, who many people know through Anne's books, her son is going to be running that tech side. He has his own studio, and so he can bring the sound and video and all the things to make it really an exciting and high quality experience. So that's my news. Yeah.
That's extraordinary. That's very exciting. And in Marin, which is so gorgeous.
Right.
I mean, I lived in Marin. I know Marin well.
Oh, you did? I knew you lived in San Francisco, but so you know actual Marin.
Oh, I lived in Mill Valley for a couple of years. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
I know Marin. Okay. I know Marin very well. Yeah. I haven't been to the College of Marin, but I know it. It's a beautiful location.
Right there. Yeah. And this is on the, I think they call it the Indian Hills part of the campus. So it's a little deeper into Marin. And that's been part of the dance is to figure out exactly, you know, the program, because it will be asking people who are in the Bay Area to drive a little further, but we're getting it all figured out and lining up hotels and all the work. But I'm just so excited that it's actually coming together and that we have yeses from everyone who wants to teach and that sort of thing. So
beautiful. Congratulations. So we'll get links to that, I guess, the next time we talk, it sounds like.
Yep. I'm waiting on signed contracts and finishing up the registration page, but we're in concept. We're all there. And that's been a real work of heart for me, Scott, to feel called into holding it as a vision. We talk about creating things that matter to us, and that's so much part of the process, especially when there are multiple, you know, celebrity personalities involved, multiple, just so many different factors to bring it all together and finding the right venue and then putting it together. My guides really encouraged me just to keep holding the vision of being on stage with Anne Lamott, turning it over to her. Okay, it's time for us to hear from her, and then watching the faces of people so excited to be there, and also the other presenters, you know, Sark and different ones, just like really holding the energy and not as some vision of it's out there. Like they said, let yourself be there. Let yourself imagine it. And then as all these, you know, pressures and the anxieties of trying to put a big thing together like that, they're like, just let yourself live for a few minutes every day in the imagination of actually being there. And it's all come together. And that I feel like has been part of the process of helping it happen.
Absolutely. That's visualization 101 or 301, right? Advanced visualization. Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, as you know, I'm a remedial student, so it takes me a while.
I feel like we've highlighted your limitations too much in this episode.
I don't feel like, I feel like if
just
anything,
it's in comparison to my gifts. To the normal person, you're very gifted.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, it's such an honor for me to just sit at your feet through this series and just learn and learn.
So. Thank you. Well, as we as we close out, I know what I said earlier. I want to also just state, we're both incredibly grateful to all of you listening. Like it's a joy to do this podcast. And I love, and Jacob loves having your ears and any feedback you offer. And if you do feel the call to leave a review and a rating, beautiful. And if you do feel the call to go through your podcast library and look at all those podcasts that you're listening to every week when they come out that you're getting excited about, leave them a review and a rating too. Show them your love. It's such an easy way to give.
Well, I'm so happy to see your face again, brother. I love you. And everyone listening, I love you. Thank you for being here.
I love you too. All right.
We don't have to try any harder. We don't need to fight.